podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Sissoko finally waited. Eriksen low, great ball into the middle. What a save by Heaton. Tonight's Davison Sanchez, Lucas Moura, and belted into the net. Brilliant goal. On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. Oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible on debut! Aurier! What a finish for 3-2 from Serge Aurier!
First-hand hit to Son. Kane, good area for Spurs, and Kane's not afraid to shoot.
Wow, what a goal, Harry Kane! That is exceptional. Lamella will try and place it. Wonderfully taken by Eric Lamella. Never afraid to take on a shot, and with good reason.
Terry in the Burnley back line, and Son breaks forward.
Oh wow, what a run! Heung-min Son from inside his own half has scored one of the best goals of his Spurs career.
Welcome. Good evening. On Newspace Order stream for you, and under the touchline, Fracker Ben. I'll be your host tonight, expat. I'm joined today by two lovely co-hosts.
Yo.
The first thing, they're all chiming in at the same time now. Toby, what's good, man?
I'm good. It's been a long time since It's been like 3 weeks since I've been on the pod. That feels like a long time to me. So long overdue. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, grand. Thank you for asking. Bit of work, bit of football, straight on here.
Bit of 5K runs as well. Obviously, light work for ASAP.
That out so consistently. Not as consistent as ASAP though. Which leads me on to asking how you're doing.
I'm good. As referenced, just got back from the gym. Had a coaching meeting this morning. I was recently named head coach of a basketball team at the local high school. We got some work to do. We don't have anybody taller than 5'11", so it's gonna be an adventure. But I feel good about it. Like Spurs, you know, we're gonna attack and we're gonna be.
You'd be the perfect coach for me and Tobes to play basketball. Then. I mean, I'm perfect. I'm average height, and then I think Tobes is a little bit taller than me.
Yeah, it's a small religious school. We're a development program at this point. The varsity team is pretty good. We're the freshman team. We're going to have some trouble.
There we go. But that's why they got you as coach, right?
That's what I'm here for.
But yeah, just for full context, and that's why we were kind of debating whose body could retain the most oxygen and who could run the best before the pod. But now we're kind of seeing how well Spurs can retain their form. Going into the Leicester game, we're going to one of the best starts of the season we've ever had. Despite not playing particularly well coming into a Leicester game, I'll go with you first though. So, like, did you expect the lineup he went with initially? Because obviously he started Perisic right wing back, he dropped Son and dropped Romero. What were your thoughts coming into it?
So when I saw the lineup, I was okay. I mean, I figured, I'll be honest, when I saw Romero was dropped, I was like, oh, he's hurt. Like, I was like, oh, I missed the news that he's hurt. There is no possible way that he's not starting for tactical reasons or for performance reasons. So I'll admit, like, when I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, Romero's hurt still or again, whatever. Perisic on the right, I like because I think Emerson, despite the fact that I think he's been playing well this year so far, he needs to be pushed, and Matt Doherty is not apparently doing that. And I've been a vocal Ryan Sess defender on this pod and elsewhere. As for dropping Sonny, it was time, and I don't want to spoil anything for anybody as we go through the game, but seems to have worked. So
exactly that. And obviously, Tobes, you were at the game. Obviously, how did you take the changes to the team for the lineup and the first? I think the first 20 minutes went. Obviously, it was quite event packed.
I felt a bit mixed with the lineup. I sort of expected some. I'm glad that he made some of those changes. Like Longley coming back into the team, even though I think he had an average game. Like Son dropping to the bench because it was necessary. Kulusevski has to be a regular starter until he actually needs rotating up because he's tired or needs a break, because he's been our best attacker this season. So it didn't really make sense for him to no longer be starting games. And then the wing backs needed a reshuffle as well. But I still wasn't overly impressed with some of the players that he failed to rotate into the side. Like, I was fully expecting Bissouma to start this game. I know we'll talk on the Leicester performance, and they played really well in the first half. Probably the best I've seen Leicester all season in the first half, in my opinion. We were bad, but they were really good. But I would have thought bottom of the league Leicester, can't buy a win, can't really defend. It's the perfect game to sort of throw some of these new faces into the team. And it's not like he's throwing in new faces that haven't like tasted Premier League football before outside of Jed Spence. You're throwing in guys like Bissouma, who've played what? Like, I'm sure he's played what? Like close to or over 100 Premier League games now, surely. So, like, yeah, just throw him into the team. Jed Spence, I know he's not played Premier League football, but throw him into the team. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, if there's a game, there's no easy game in the Prem, but there are certain games that you can sort of cater to. And I think this game, if you're telling me that you can rotate Sanchez into this team, yeah, why can't you rotate Jed Spence into this team? And that was my grievance with the lineup. Like, why didn't I see Bissouma and Jed Spence starting? But everything else, I wasn't too mad at. Even Sanchez, I was a bit concerned, which is normal, because I think we're always concerned when Sanchez comes into the team and Romero is out of the team. Sorry, my printer's printed something. But I think fundamentally, again, because of the nature of the opposition, as poor as Sanchez can be, I know that no matter what, we have enough firepower to win this game. So even him playing poorly won't really like significantly impact the score.
Yeah, fair enough. I think the idea to play Sanchez and Perisic together on that right, or Perisic initially out on the right-hand side, was one, obviously, just to give us that little bit better quality in the final third on that right-hand side, which we've been lacking, and someone who can retain the ball deep and hold Sanchez's hand, so to speak. Sanchez didn't obviously take the help and kind of threw himself under the bus. Fair enough. We conceded. Had a very good reaction, to be fair. Went 2-1 up. And then, obviously, for the rest of the first half, mostly by design, we invited pressure on, because we're very good at springing on teams, especially when it comes to protecting leads. And for one reason or another, we couldn't play out. Like, normally, we're actually very good under pressure, but a lot of loose balls. When the balls actually reached the forwards, they couldn't hold it. And then we managed to see out the first half, mostly thanks to Lloris. Madison, Dewsbury Hall, Tielemans were running the show. Indeed, he was doing a decent job marshalling Kane as well. There were a few balls we tried to directly hit to him out of defence, and indeed, he was just there.
He played really well, man.
For the first half, he did, yeah.
Up until he had that mishap in the second half, he was playing well. And even after that, I felt like he had... Sorry, it's still going. Even after the mishap, I felt like he still had some good moments, but just too sloppy on the ball. And I know he's been playing poorly, but even when he was playing well, indeed he's had that susceptibility. Is that a word, susceptibility?
I think it is.
I think it's
really so, susceptible too.
He has been susceptible to like that high press where the midfielder nicks the ball off him. I remember a game against Chelsea that Leicester had that they drew 1-1. James Maddison actually equalised for them that game, like 3-4 years ago, where Mount did the exact same thing. Bissouma, and Didi got caught on the ball, and Mount took the ball off him, ran through on goal, and slotted it. So, it's a bit, it's something that I'm glad that we definitely exploited. The first half performance was way too chaotic.
So
open.
So, and, I, go ahead, Tubbs. No, I just was going to say, just on Ndidi and the rest of this team, Leicester are the weirdest side in the Premier League to me, because you look at their guys one by one and you're like, this is a good-ish player or has been a good player in the last 2 years. And outside of Danny Ward, you know, all of them were either right, you know, part of the team or part of a coherent team, you know, in the recent past where Leicester were a coherent, competent top half of the Premier League side. And I don't know what the hell Brendan Rodgers is doing. If he is spending his time going over taxes with Tobes, if he is going on vacation.
I'm not an accountant.
my files. But I mean, I'll tell you this. Brendan Rodgers is accounting his money and not accounting for players playing forward. You like that? Does everybody like that? It's a weird thing to watch his team, because you look at them and you're like, why aren't you good? You know, Tielemans, Madison, Barnes, Ndidi, Justin, like these are all good-ish players. And they play horrendously. And also, in terms of the first half, like not being able to get the ball into the attack coherently, I know that the second half happened, and we'll speak on that. I thought that this was the worst game that Bentancur has played for us.
Bro, awful. In the first
it part. Was. It awful. Was every time the ball touched his feet, it went 5 yards.
Bro,
it was ridiculous. Like, I thought he was coming off at half. I was like, you need to get him out of this game. And then, of course, he scores 2 minutes or 1 minute into the second, but it was bad.
You can segue into the second half if you want, because I think we're pretty much all synced up with what we're about to say about Bentancur.
Second half, he was a completely different player.
Like, do we think Conte just screamed at him for 15 minutes straight?
Must have, because some of the stuff he was doing in the first half, he was taking the piss.
Yeah,
he was losing the ball for fun. He was playing, his passes were so sloppy. There was one, and for someone who's quite secure technically, he can play one touch, two touch, the ball gets played into his feet, he can play it first time. All of these passes were just wayward. So wayward. So wayward. Just constantly giving the ball away to Leicester. Like, my example when I did my post-match was the first half, I know we show good fight to go from a goal down to turn around and score to 2-1. But you wouldn't have been mad if Leicester went into that half 3-2 up. You wouldn't have been mad, because they were the better side in the first half.
Absolutely.
And it almost felt as if we were giving Leicester all the ammunition they needed to shoot us down. Yes, they're playing well, but why do you have to play so bad? Why do you have to constantly give away the ball? Why do you have to miss your press? Why do you have to not be able to retain the ball? It was so bad. It was so bad from different parts of our team. Even Perisic, he lost the ball 2-3 times on that right-hand side. And it wasn't just him as well. Davinson Sanchez made that horrendous mistake and exemplifies why he needs to be sold, in my opinion. But when you look at his actual performance, he was probably one of the few that didn't really give away the ball, apart from his mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He actually had, if you watch his performance in the first half, he actually used the ball relatively well. And mm-hmm. he defended well. Do you get what I'm saying? It was just so chaotic. Kane as well, giving away the ball. Richie couldn't get the ball to stick. Kulusevski was the one that looked the brightest of the attack. And even he, I think James Justin and that David Faze, or whatever their name is, I think they did pretty decent to try and contain his threat. Because Kulu started off bright, and 1v1 situations, he had Justin. But when it was 2v1, I think they did an okay job. So, yeah, it was just bad in the first half, man. Really bad.
Just a quick nod to Gianni Vio as well. But do you know what Bentancur reminds me of? He's one of those players for me who... He's that casual, and he sometimes needs a little thing to light a fire in him sometimes. Yeah, he reminds me of a stoner. And when he plays like a stoner, the rest of the team play like stoners, he's just so laid back, so casual, so composed. It's almost a bit too much. And sometimes he's just left kind of chasing the game and watching it go by. But then once he gets into it, obviously aided by us being a little bit more on the front foot, he just gets that team ticking. sobers up as well, so to speak. Sorry, Asa, you were about to go in there.
Probably, but I think the thing with Benson Curran, I think the thing that this team lacks and has lacked since, I mean, Dembele, maybe, is someone in the midfield who can just, like, calm everything down, who can just, like, take a breath, take a second, organize your team. And I think that that's supposed to be in this setup because it's not going to be Højbjerg. Like, I think it's supposed to be Benson Curran. And when he plays, like, this unbothered, right? Like when it works, it's like, oh, he's so free flowing. He's so, you know, useful in that scenario. When it's not working, like you use the stoner analogy. But to me, it's like, it's unbothered. Like he's just like, oh, well, no need to take the game by the reins. It'll happen. It's fine. And when things are going well, that's a super useful thing to have. But when things are, when you need someone to grab the game by the shirt, calm it down, relax, recycle backwards, build up, do what you're supposed to do. He's not really great at that. And there's nobody else in this team when Romero's out, because Romero does a really good job of it. Despite his like his aggression on defense, he does a really good job of getting the ball where it's supposed to be in the buildup. And Bentiker needs to play with someone who can, if he's not going to do it, somebody needs to. And I don't know if that's Bissouma, Skippy, I don't know who that is, but somebody needs to be able to calm this team down when pressure's coming.
I think Bentancur can do it, and I think he in our run last season towards the back end of the season, him and Højbjerg developed a really good understanding. And I think, for all intents and purposes, okay, he's not as good as Dembele at it, but he's the best one in our midfield that can do that. I don't think Bissouma is our best midfielder all round, but I think in terms of slowing down the game, like taking the game at his tempo, dictating how quick we move the ball, I think that's his MO to a T. I just think that he's, this season, that game literally embodies Bentancur's season so far. Like, he's had games where he's been really good, like Fulham, like Southampton. But then he's had games where he's been really poor. Like Marseille, he was terrible. Sporting, he was terrible. I'm thinking of other games. Leicester in the first half, for instance, he was bad. Nottingham Forest, he wasn't good. I'm trying to think of other.
Didn't he have a tough game against Chelsea?
Chelsea, he had a tough game, but I don't really like. I'm giving Højbjerg and Bentancur like leeway in that game because I think tactically Conte just didn't allow for them to have the games they wanted because they're literally 2v4. Do you get what I'm saying? But I'm talking about what Bentancur has done on the ball this season. And in some of these games, he's just not been good enough. And off the ball as well, his press is like 1 second too late, et cetera, et cetera, when he's playing poorly. So I do think that he can be that player because we've seen him do it for Spurs already this season as well as last season. We just need to now get him. He needs to get himself back to his consistent level. Last season, he was playing at, for me, for the most part, he played at like a consistent 7.5 or 8 out of 10, with exception of like one or two matches where he was poor. Liverpool, the way he was poor. Man United, he was poor. Yeah. But for the most part, the guy was really consistent. And I think now when he's not consistent, this team feels it.
And the thing is, he's played like 800 minutes or something, or 700 minutes already this year. This is where I think Skippy's injury really hurts. In answering your question beforehand, this was Bissouma's 118th Premier League appearance. You can play him. It's fine. Yeah. And I know Conte has said like, oh, it's taken him a little bit more time to adopt the system, to understand what we're trying to do here. Look, you need three midfielders. And right now we have two because he doesn't trust Bissouma and Skippy's hurt. So I think that this is going to rear its head between August, you know, October 1st and November. What is it? 13th is the last part of that run where it's two games a week, every week.
Yeah.
There needs to be some rotation in the midfield and maybe this break is good for Bissouma because it gives him an opportunity to really get some tactical understanding. But if he's not ready to go, we've got a big problem. It's a lot of games and not a lot of time.
Hundreds. And I do think, sorry, Owen, just to come in on that as well. I think beyond Bissouma, I think it's down to Conte. Like, and that's why I was so heavily, I was on Conte's I was criticizing Conte after that Sporting game. I'm not going to lie, because he is the one that decides who comes in, who comes out. You can see when players aren't playing poorly and you have options, different options on the bench. Use them. I couldn't believe that Bentancur and Højbjerg started that game against Leicester. I could not believe it, because the two previous games before that against Sporting and Marseille, they were categorically bad. And not just Bentancur, Højbjerg as well. And Højbjerg is probably, in my opinion, has been our best midfielder this season, but they were bad. So that should give you a sign to freshen things up. Switch, take out one of the two, bring in Bissouma. Switch to a free midfield if you want to switch to a free midfield. Just don't leave it the same.
This is what I was actually going to say, because all the criticisms that were levelled at Conte, and deservedly so, after Sporting, were that he can't rotate here. He's not managing the game well. He's not making the changes quick enough. Like, when he does make changes, they're far too late. Like, even when we went and 1-0 down against Sporting, he told the subs to sit back down. It was like, okay, ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense, but okay, we move. Had all this criticism thrown at him. When it comes to the Leicester game, it's like 60 minutes then. And we're still winning 3-2, but he still actually thinks, you know, we still look really flat. And we kind of did. Like, Leicester was still bopping it in midfield, like sustaining pressure on us. And then, was it? The first sub was Emerson Royale for Perisic on 55 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then on the hour, he brought on Romero
and Son.
Yeah. And then 10 minutes later, he eventually bring on the guy he threw under the bus, Bissouma. So, almost a rhetorical question, but how do you feel like he managed that game in the second half in the end?
Excellent. I think he managed the game excellently well in the second half, because he did the one thing that a lot of fans give him stick for, and even at times I give him stick for. He changed, even when he had no prerogative to change. Spurs were still winning. Yeah.
Right.
Spurs were still winning. The game was open. So whilst it looked like Leicester could score one, it looked like we could score another. But I like the fact that he saw that there were still gaps in our performance, despite the fact that we were winning. And he, not only did he make changes, he made brave changes. I mentioned how Kulusevski's been our best attacker this season. I stand by it. And he took off Kulusevski. And at the time, I'm thinking, why are you taking off Kulusevski? And then he switched to a free midfield. I said, okay, this is new. You've not done this. You've not done this since Liverpool, Leicester away. Since Leicester away or Liverpool. Yeah, Leicester away early on this year, sorry. Liverpool at home was last year. Yeah. This is, or Wolves even, when we were down 2-0. So I said, this is interesting. Fair enough. I can respect that, because you are telling me that you still want to go for this game, but you just want to make sure that whilst we're going for this game, we don't leave ourselves susceptible at the back. And lo and behold, that's what happened. Lo and behold, that's what we were able to prevent. That Bissouma change completely changed the game in our favour. Bissouma came on, and now it's more men in the middle to deal with Maddison, Dewsbury Hall and Tielemans. It now means that the likes of Højbjerg and Bentancur can push higher, compress higher. And it's no coincidence that Bentancur, he was fantastic in the second half. His mid-level press, his second phase press, wins us the ball back off James Justin, and it leads to Son's first goal. Do you get what I'm saying? And then even a couple minutes after that, Son has a chance that he skews, takes first time. Who's on the assist? Bentancur again. And he has more license to go up and press higher and try and chase the game further up the pitch, because Bissouma's there now. Bissouma can shuttle left, can shuttle right, and he can win the ball back, and he can drive with the ball. So for me, the changes, kudos to him. Kudos to him. I respect it.
UEFA Champions League football is streaming on Paramount Plus. 9 months of heart-stopping, hold-your-breath exhilaration is underway, with the biggest stars, top teams, and craziest fan bases across Europe. Watch every game from the group stage through the knockout rounds as Benzema and Real Madrid defend their title against Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, PSG, Barcelona, and more in football's biggest club competition. So don't miss a single sweat-soaked second of regulation time, stoppage time, and extra time, and stream every match of the UEFA Champions League live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Exactly, and obviously we saw the game out. Sonny got a hat trick, and it was a little bit harsh on Leicester in the end. But again, we won the game 6-2, without necessarily playing that well. It led to fans after the game, obviously calling for us to play three in midfield. Obviously, start with a three in midfield. So with these new football metrics flying around now, I would only ask, would a three in midfield at the start improve our field tilt?
Motherfucking field tilt. Pathetic.
So in America, we call that field position. And can you win the field position battle?
This is good that you're explaining, because I still don't actually know what it is.
So basically, like, I think it's like it's a very like technical way of saying like, where is the game being played? That like it's like a highfalutin way of saying like, are we playing in your half or in our half? Are we able to tilt the field in a way that the ball is rolling the way we want it to, by and large? And I think the thing is with Bissouma, and I'm torn with this, because if you're going to play a three-man midfield, that means that you're leaving two of your ostensibly, what, six best players on the bench at the start every single time. You know, between Sonny, Kulusevski, Richarlison, and Kane, of those four, you're leaving two on the bench to play Højbjerg, Bendikur, and Bissouma. But it's also very clear to me that if Sonny is on the field, Sonny needs the ball to be progressed. And our two-man midfield is not the best way to do it. We've seen that it's worked with Kane dropping deep. But then Kane's, you know, the ball is entering the attacking third with Kane at midfield. You know, it's the type of situation where it's a changeup that I really like. Mohamed sort of alluded to it, that Conte likes it as a mid-game changeup. You know, if we are going to play defensively, I can see him starting with it. But in these games that you feel, okay, we have a talent advantage, we should be able to control the game, if not control the ball, where the game is being played doesn't seem to bother Conte that much. It doesn't seem to bother him that he sort of forswears possession and doesn't want the field to tilt in a way that necessarily gives us the lion's share of the ball. So even though it does allow us to control midfields, even though it does allow us to control the game a little bit better, I don't think Conte cares. I think that he's happy to absorb pressure, counter out, rely on moments of brilliance, you know, between Kane and Son and Kulusevski and, I guess, Richarlison, and go from there. So while I would love a three-man midfield, A, we don't have enough midfielders to really do it game in, game out. But B, I don't think Conte wants to. Which is really the point.
Fair enough. And what are your thoughts on the three-man midfield, Tobes, and if it would improve the tilt of the field?
it definitely can, for sure. If you have the numerical advantage in the middle, it means that the opposition don't really dominate you as much when they have the ball. It means there's more men to try and chase the ball, win the ball back, and also keep the ball. Because for the most part, when we're playing in the two-man midfield, we're at a numerical disadvantage, which is what kills us in some of these matches when we're not playing the best. But yeah, no, I think ultimately Conte, it's weird. Like, I can't call him a pragmatist, but I can't exactly call him like a free-flowing type manager. He's in the middle. It's obvious that he wants Spurs to be a side that can be more threatening on the counter-attack, way more threatening on the counter-attack, as opposed to being this ball-dominant side that plays exclusively in the opposition's half. But I don't also think that means that he doesn't want to be in the opposition's half at times. And I think when you look at some of our best performances last season, we had more possession. We were in the opposition half more. And I think he does want us to mix it up. And I think what is paramount is that we take greater care of the ball than we have done this season. And I think the three in midfield helps us do that more so than the two in midfield. But like Asa said, one, it's not his preference. And two, we only have four midfielders. So playing three consistently every game leaves you with only one option to either rotate off the bench or rotate in the next game. And that's not going to do anyone any favors when you look at our next run of games. However, I would like him to use it here and there. Like, he doesn't have to use it every game, but I think he should be selective and choose his moments to use that tactic. Like, there should be moments where you can say to yourself, yep, I can recognize the opposition I'm playing. I'm going to go over three-man midfield from the off.
Fair enough, man. I mean, I guess I'll throw my two cents in slightly. Like, I wouldn't necessarily start with a three-man midfield purely because I think the profile of midfielders we have would make that midfield three a bit flat. I don't think we have a kind of forward, incisive, creative enough thinking eight that we can kind of play. I'd say our most forward thinking eight is probably Huibio.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think he's got that much quality that he can play as like that third most advanced midfielder. The ideal profile of that player has gone on loan to Napoli, and I respect Conte's decision on that. Maybe Kulusevski can play there, but I think that would mean Kane would have to split more as like a channel running wider split striker. We need a better right wing back for that. So obviously Kane can drop in. Yeah, I know, I'd keep it more the same structure, the same system, but we just need to be a bit braver from the off in games. Like, we need to get those wider centre backs a little bit higher up early to engage. Kulusevski can tuck in a bit more. I don't know if it's by design or not, but he seems to be holding like a wider starting position than he did last season. I see Kane has been dropping in, but I don't think he's been in his best form when it comes to ball retention and his creativity, although I do think he had a good improvement against Leicester. So I think we need to persist with that with just a few more smaller tweaks, and then we can go on from there. I love how you failed to acknowledge Pepe Matasada. I think technically we've got five centre midfielders now.
We have, but we know he's not really going to play Pepe Matasada. No.
Very true.
And I would like him to play more games. But I think Carabao, hopefully we can see some of these young G's get some minutes. Just a point on the two in midfield. If he's going to stick with the two in midfield, which I'm actually not too mad at, yeah, play the right balance of two. Because Bissouma, in my opinion, is, for me, the most equipped midfielder we have to play in a two-man midfield. I think if you're looking at midfielders in our squad who can play up against a numerical advantage, it's Bissouma. It's Bissouma. He's got the running power. He's got the tackling. He's got the dribbling. He's got the close control. Like, he's, for me, he's our best midfielder. And really and truly, when you're playing a two-man midfield, he has proven to dominate more midfields than any of our other midfielders we have right now.
That said, and I do agree with that as well, but who would you drop?
I think Huibio.
I would drop Bentancur. I thought you were going to say Huibio.
I'll drop Bentancur because Huibio, I think what Huibio is offering us on the ball going forward right now is greater than what Bentancur is offering us.
He's actually had a really good season.
Even though I think Bentancur all round is a better player, I think Huibio is a bit more decisive when he's on the ball, when he's playing well. Do you get what I'm saying? But my optimal pairing would obviously be Bentancur and Bissouma. But I don't know who's going to be the one that's doing Hoybier's job, because I don't really see... I don't think Bentancur is as effective as Huibio in the final third.
And that I agree with as well. As I said earlier, I think Huibio is our most effective final kind of third creative eight. And I do respect the kind of communication and leadership skills he brings to that midfield. And to be fair to Huibio, he's had a better season than Bentancur and tends to turn up more in our bigger games. And we've got the North London Derby coming up as well, which obviously makes it a perfect time for Son to come into form.
Yeah.
Who would your kind of perfect and ideal midfield be going forward, Asa?
I would really love to have Skip and Bissouma, actually. I really like the manner in which Skip plays, and I think that he frees up so much sort of tactically with his sort of traditional holding defensive midfielder instincts. And so I think that if you are going to play that two-man midfield, one of them needs to be sort of in that destroyer mold. And while, you know, Skippy, you know, we've only seen him play what, like 10 games or something, you know, because he's always hurt. But like when we've seen him, he has been sort of game for that. And I think that he would allow everybody around him to play, maybe play a little bit higher, maybe play a little bit more freely, because they know he's the one sitting back. Whereas I think one of the problems that we have with Bentancourt and Højbjerg is there is this like, are you going forward? Am I going forward? Are we both sitting back? Cadence to it, because neither of them are traditionally that deep lying player. So I think Skip provides a lot. And also based on all accounts, he's a very verbal, very vocal leader type, which is also something that I really want to have in my midfield.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. I definitely don't hate that either. Bless Skip. He's been unlucky. He played today as well, but we'll get into it. But there's been some other weird rumours going around as well. Weirdly timed rumours as well. Conte apparently wanting to go back to Juventus. I think it's been pretty much squashed by a lot of tier one sources today anyway. But did you ever believe there was a chance he would even be tempted to go back there?
There is a chance. There, in my opinion, I think there is a chance that he would go back there. But my question is why? I remember I posed this question to in the Touchline FC chat, because maybe I was a bit too strong in my criticism of Juve, but they're a sinking ship right now. And it's not to say that Spurs are a bigger club than Juve. I think Juve, by all accounts, are a bigger club than Spurs and have won way more than Tottenham have in the last couple of years, as poor as they are right now. And they still have some good players. But look at the environment right now. Yeah, they sold pretty much all of their best young players. They've burdened the team with a lot more older players. They still have some top talent, Paul Pogba, Chiesa, etc. But two of their best three, four players are injured right now for the foreseeable. They can't spend any money because they're financially crippled. They can't even afford to, I'm seeing rumors that they can't even afford to sack Allegri.
Yeah. That's got to be the only reason he's still at the job.
So like, I'm just looking at that. And as a project, I'm looking at Conte standing in football now in comparison to where it was at when he first took over the Juve job. And as much as you have a lot of familiarity with Juve, and we all know Italians love their country, he's always looking to fly back to Italy after every game. But why would you want to put yourself in that situation where you know you're not really going to have as much authority and funding as you used to have to actually shape the squad the way you want it? And I'm not saying it to say that Spurs are the bee's knees. I accept that Conte could easily leave Spurs just by nature who he is. He could easily turn around and say at the end of the season, I'm gone. And I wouldn't be surprised. I would not be surprised. But everything I've heard so far over the last couple of months from Conte, from the club, the players that we signed, yeah, they all indicate that he's more likely to stay at Spurs for another year than leave. So until I see this verified by like an actual tier one source and Conte says, I'm leaving at the end of the season, I'm not buying it. It's fugazi for me.
Yeah, I mean, Juve are in shambles right now. I happen to watch a lot of them because they have a young American talent who Topes refused to mention. Because he's
the most mediocre, of players they got.
Just a hater. Because you know,
Does he start?
Yes, he starts game in, game out.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number eight. Look, he starts It is not my business to debate about whether or not Paul Pogba would start. I don't deal in hypotheticals, I deal in facts. Facts is that he's starting every game, but they're a train wreck, and I don't know. And look, like, I get it. It's when it's your, you know, arguably one of, you know, the biggest, or one of the biggest, certainly one of the three biggest clubs in your home nation. You know, he's been there, he's comfortable there. You lend credence to those rumors, but now is not the time to go to Juventus. It will just hurt your reputation. That's all it will do. Because as much as I love my boy Weston McKennie, if Weston McKennie is starting for you, you know, game in, game out, you're going to have a bad time in Serie A. Like, that's just where we're at. There's no real reason for him to leave at this point, right? Like, I mean, Spurs are playing relatively well in the thing that he cares about, because he has a history of not really giving too much of a care about Europe. But, you know, he is doing well where he wants to do well. He's got his guys more or less throughout the squad, and he's beloved. And, you know, while he hasn't gotten everything that he's wanted, he has gotten most of what he's wanted over the summer, right? Like last January was a big deal that more players were sent out than brought in. That didn't happen this time. They didn't send out Hill with no plan to replace him, which to me says that Conte is being listened to. So, you know, if you're listened to on the field and you're listened to in the executive offices, and you're playing well, there's no real impetus, especially at this point, because Juventus are not going to get better in the next 3 months. There's no reason to do it right now. So like Tope said, like, until we get an Alistair Gold telling us that it's happening, I'm uninterested in the rumors.
Yeah, it's fair. Like, I think a lot of people were kind of alluding to his fallout with their president or something like that, where it's like, you know, they could kiss and make up, like, it's business at the end of the day. But like you alluded to, Acer, we're creating something around Conte where, like you say, he's been listened to, and we're building a structure around him which is quite similar to what Pep Guardiola has at City, where he's getting the guys in the backroom staff that he wants. Obviously, Paratici's already there. He's got a few countrymen. He's obviously got his coaching staff with him. He got his new fitness coach this summer, I believe. Got the set piece coach, new scouting overhaul, as he's alluded to. Look, I know we've spent money in the past, and he used the word we spent money in the past, but we need to actually scout, and that everything else, it seems like we're just backing him to the hilt. So why would he leave that again for a club which, as you both alluded to, is pretty much in the mud? And especially after we've bought like three of their best players recently, Romero, Bentancur and Kulusevski. And then he'd go to Juventus. He definitely wouldn't be able to get them back off us. I mean, yes, he'll have Weston McKennie, who scored a decent goal against PSG. But other than that, I haven't really seen Juventus play this season. Other than they drew some weird game where they had some goal disallowed in the last minute to some Sortina or something like that. Then they lost to Monza, had the worst start in their Champions, that really bad start in their Champions League campaign. Yes,
I choose not to watch them. I think the only time I've watched a full Juventus game this season was against PSG. I choose not to watch them because it was torture last season. Second part of the campaign, it was so boring to watch their games. Like,
it's been torture watching them for time.
Oh, they're terrible. And it doesn't even make sense as well, because they actually have some really good players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't, like, they're terrible. They're not great on the counter. They don't really play good possession football. They don't really cut teams open. They don't create a multitude of chances. And they're not really that solid defensively. They're just a weird side right now. A weird side. But they've got the name. That's why. They got the allure. They got the name, and they're in Italy. So, of course, people put two and two together and you're like, okay, yeah, maybe you could see him there. Yeah, fair enough. You could see him there. But
I mean, Juve have gotten humiliated in their last two Champions League games. You know, in Italy, they're playing really poorly. They haven't won a game in a month or something. Like, they went 0 for September. In terms of actually winning games, you know, Benfica bodied them. PSG obviously, you know, rolled over them. I just don't see what the appeal is right now. You know, outside of the ability to work with Weston McKennie, which I get. Like, yeah. Look, I get that you want
location.
Location
and name. That's literally it. Literally it.
Yeah. Yeah. The
Juve. Or Spurs, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, and like you said, like they do have some players. I mean, Pogba, Vlahovic, Kenny, Bremer, like they've got the backbone of a team that should be coherent. Right. They're just not. Allegri's not a good coach. So that's where you're at. But enough about Juventus. They like Arsenal, are not a relevant side for my Champions League purposes.
Yeah, fuck Juve. Although about Champions League, Sammy's asking, Juve not getting out of that group, but are we still confident of getting out of ours?
Yes and yes. The answer to both of those questions are yes. But Juve is lucky because they are definitely going to make it to Europa, because the fourth team in that group, as much as I love them dearly, are not good. It's not going to happen for them. But Juve is going to go to Europa and probably by then have a new coach, go through January, and then win Europa, because that's how these things work. Nothing can be nice.
Exactly. So moving on to kind of close this show out, obviously a few of our players played today. We had a few players play for the England under-21s. Don't know if anyone else saw the game, but I watched most of the second half and the end of the first. See, Sessegnon, Spence and Skip started for England under-21s. Adeyemi came on for Italy at halftime. Did anyone else watch the game? Let's just skim over it quick.
I had it on in the background. I missed a lot of the first half, but I heard Jed Spence looked really good in the first half. And I kept hearing the commentator say, sing Skip and Gallagher's praises for the work that they were doing in the middle of the park to sort of close down Italy's midfielders, win the ball back, recycle, and get England going. I didn't really see much of Spence in the second half. But I already know that Jed Spence looks a good player. But you know who I really think we got a good one with? Udoji. I think he's class, man. I think that kid is class. Like, he just looks threatening whenever he gets the ball. He wants to hurt the opposition. He wants to drive with the ball. He wants to take risks with the ball. And he's got good tech as well, man. He's class, man. Absolutely class. We might have a good one there, man.
Yeah, he looks very technically sound and he's very direct as well. It'd be interesting to see if he does those infield runs as much as he does for Udinese in Italy under-21s at Spurs. Skip had an interesting game for me. He was very good in his pressures, won the ball a fair few times, very good at closing down, but some of his playing out from the back and just general ball retention was shaky. It was a good game for him to get some rust off, but he gave it away a fair few times in England's defensive third. Could and should have been punished, to be fair, but he got away with it, and so England got the win. It's interesting Spence stood out when we've got our starting wing back on the opposite flank. Sessegnon had an okay game, but Spence stood out, which was interesting because you can kind of compare the two. See, Conte would have seen him in training as well. Now they've seen him both on the same pitch in a game for England under-21s. And yeah, Spence, I didn't see enough of him being tested for being pressured in his own half. But whenever he got the ball, he was really, really positive. Really positive. And if it wasn't for Gallagher missing an open goal, then he would have pretty much forced a play pretty much off his own back. It's encouraging, man. Fully think he has to start one or at least a couple games in this run between October and November. Yeah, generally really positive on Spence.
Yeah, man, I'm just waiting for him, like you said, I'm just waiting for him to get a game now and show what he's got, man. Listen, I'm not like a Jed Spence stan. I didn't really watch him in the Championship, but he looks like he's got the tools to be a good player for Spurs. And we just need Conte to just throw this guy in and see what he can do. And it looks like hopefully he may get a run out in that sort of October period. And if not, then he'll probably play in the League Cup. But either way, even though it's not to our liking, he will eventually get an opportunity under Conte. And we just got to hope that he does what he's rumoured and can do. And then the rest will be history, man. I don't really think it's going to take a lot for Jed Spence to oust Emerson from this team. I really don't.
I think that the thing is with Spence, and Sessegnon is sort of the inverse of this, is that I think Spence, given his history, given where we've seen him be successful, and given his lack of run in the team, I think that he is the type of person who can dominate levels that are at him or below, but he might struggle against teams that are going to put him under pressure. And I think that Conte, given Conte's sort of history and general demeanor, doesn't want to take that risk. And granted, doing that with Emerson Royale and Davinson Sanchez back there is like sort of like a, well, why them and not him? But, you know, I think that Spence is probably someone who just doesn't have the trust of Conte yet. And the only way that he's going to get that trust is in training or playing, you know, a situation where he has to come in and has to play some significant minutes. Whereas Sessegnon, I don't think that he can raise his level. I think that he just is who he is. And that's
crap, man.
I mean, I disagree. I've said that I think that he's like a useful-ish defensive wingback. but like, I think like Sessegnon just like is who he is. And against, you know, Italy 21s, he's going to look the same as he does against Liverpool. Like it just like, he just plays the same regardless of who's in front of him. So while I am an apologist for him, like the apology is that he is about as good as the eighth best. Like he's at the like eighth best team in the Premier League eternally. And whoever he plays against, that's more or less how he's going to play. And so while you throw him out there against Liverpool or City and you're like, wow, he like really stood up against, you know, really, really good attackers. You put him out there against, you know, Italy's U21s and you're like, why does he suck so bad? And I think it's sort of the same thing. He just can't raise his level.
No, it's a weird one to defend him off the back of the Leicester game as well, where I thought he was really, really tentative, for lack of a better word. He was poor, but yeah, he was really tentative.
Let's just call a spade a spade. He was crap. Defensively, he was crap. And going forward, he did not really offer us anything. And listen, this is last chance saloon for Cess this season in my eyes. I'm already dusted with him, but Conte seems to like him. If you can't cut it at this team this season, you ain't going to be a starter next year because Destiny is going to come in and he's going to take your spot clean.
Would you say that that is his destiny?
Boom! Boom! Boom!
It might have to be. That was the turn I was making after Tobe said Loftus-Cheek was a better wingback than Sessegnon.
But he is.
No, he's not, man. He's actually not. You know he's not.
Let's be serious.
Listen, Sessegnon is not good. How many times do I have to say this? He's not good. He's not good. I've tried to see. Oh, he's working with Conte. Oh, he's young. Oh, he's this. He's that. He's just crap. Until Sessegnon gives me a reason to not call him crap, I'm going to keep calling him crap. Until you give me like a whole season where you actually play at a steadily acceptable level. And I'm not even talking assists we can get. I'm saying just give me like reasonable performances, decent going forward, decent at the back, like nothing too heavy. But I can't even get that from Sessegnon. Nah, man.
I mean, I'm riding for a really long time on that Liverpool game where he played. I thought he played really well, and everything since then has been sort of like mediocre. But like, I just like keep going. Like, if we could just get that for 38 games. Or 50 games, or however many games we're gonna have throughout the course of a year, like that'd be great. You know, I'm not gonna sit here and say like he's played well. He's fine. The problem is that we have ambitions beyond fine. I think is like really the point. Like he's fine, but fine isn't good enough.
Yeah,
it's just also we don't have many other fullback options that aren't just fine.
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I'm in big trouble.
It's okay. He's got this season, and then we can refer back to Ace's lovely pun. But yeah, just as a closing note, I was just going to say, like, on Spence again. Like, I just remembered, so I saw a little clip of him earlier, just how, like, he looked confident in the game as well, to be fair. Like, he didn't look like he hadn't played a game for a few weeks or hadn't started a game. And it was this, like, FIFA ratings question thing, and he was asked, it was Spence asked directly, like, oh, who's the fastest player at Spurs? And he just kind of sat back, like, frowned a bit, and was just like, me.
Yeah.
And he was actually correct. Yeah, he's one of those players who's like, very confident, and it doesn't border and it doesn't cross the line of arrogance for me. So I'm interested to see him kind of project that on the pitch for us. Soon come. But as for tonight's show, thank you, Goldberg. Thank you, The Worm, for joining me tonight. Thank you to Zar Spurs TV and Mohammed in particular in the comments. Shout out to you. But as for this week, we'll be done. We'll be back with more streams in the week and the audio released every Saturday morning. But on behalf of the NSO, all right, peace.
Peace.
Adios.
belted into the net, brilliant goal! On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. Oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible on debut! Aurier!
Sports Social Podcast Network.